Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Spirit Fire Radio. My name is Steve Kramer, and I am joined with my co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Steve. Good to be here.
Great to be with you again. So we're going to continue our month-long exploration of interconnectivity. And today on this show, we're going to talk about the limiting belief of separateness. So we've talked quite a bit about this, intrinsic interconnectedness. We are without a doubt connected to each other, whether we like it or not, huh, Dorothy? And
yes.
But yet we see separateness, we see separativeness constantly, really all around us. And where does that come from? And what is that about? We're going to explore that today. Dorothy, do you have a quote? You usually have a wonderful quote.
Well, I actually have three today, Steve, if you will indulge me. They're all slightly different, but I think that they speak to the topic that we're going to be covering. The first one is from Sharon Salzberg. She writes, "Throughout our lives, we long to love ourselves more deeply and to feel connected with others. Instead, we often contract, fear intimacy, and suffer a bewildering sense of separation. We crave love, and yet we are lonely. Our delusion of being separate from one another, of being apart from all that is around us, gives rise to all of this pain." So I think that's that encapsulates that state of separateness.
And this idea that it's a delusion, I love that that was in there, that it's a delusion of being separate from one another, yet somehow it's really a part of our psyche that we have to unlearn.
That's right. Then Daniel Goldman writes, "Self-absorption in all its forms kills empathy, let alone compassion. When we focus on ourselves, our world contracts as our problems and preoccupations loom large. But when we focus on others, our world expands. Our problems drift to the periphery of the mind and so seem smaller, and we increase our capacity for connection or compassionate action." And one of the things I like about this quote, Steve, is it relates to what we were talking about last week, that we are connected, but we control the sense that we have of that connection.
Yes.
And then the third quote is from Albert Einstein. He writes, "A human being is a part of the whole called by us universe, a part limited in time and space. When we experience ourselves, our thoughts, and our feelings as something separated from the rest, we have a kind of optical delusion of consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affections for a few persons nearest to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty."
Nice. Wow. Einstein, what a beautifully spiritual man. We all talk about him as a scientist, but really he's quite the spiritual leader, if you will.
That's right. And the, you know, again, we have this idea that this, that separateness is a delusion. It's not actually our reality. And another thing I just want to bring in here, Steve, before we get into the dynamic of separateness, is in a lot of spiritual teachings, there are teachings about how to connect, like to the soul, the spirit, the monad. You know, it's like a vertical connection that you're making up into the ether, kind of the spiritual ether. But as important is the horizontal expansion, which is, I think, what Einstein was talking about when he talks about widening our circle of compassion. So, you know, we stretch upwards in terms of our awareness, our consciousness, but we need to reach out and keep expanding our circle of compassion to recognize that we are, in fact, connected to everyone.
Well, and what I notice is that there is this constant talk about expansion versus contraction, you know, this idea of self-absorption, that this idea of when our vision or when our reality becomes just the one, when it becomes contracted to only include ourselves, that that's where the problems begin, where we're actually working against the nature and the way that our cosmos works. It is expansive in nature, and it takes energy to contract and hold ourselves in separation and in contraction. And so, you know, we've got to constantly work with these universal laws that state, you know, that we are expansive in nature, that we have to go with that sort of universal flow, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think part of it, having been trained as a psychologist, I will indicate that it's not just the scientists, it's also psychologists that have contributed to some of this delusion, because we've focused on the, you know, on psychological development as becoming independent, as becoming, you know, a separate entity with your own identity. And that's true, that's important, but it's not the end of the process. It's interdependence. It's recognizing that connection to others, which is really what maturation is all about.
Yeah, goodness, the word dependence is like, mm-hmm. you know, salt on a wound to a lot of people in, you know, in many circles. And so you have to be careful when you talk about, when you put that word anywhere.
That's right.
Interdependence, you know.
That's right. So if we think about the power of the mind, which we were talking about last week, you know, and illusion is a very central tool of our mental process, and the core illusion that to me is what we're talking about this week is this us-them divide, that yes. It's me separate from the world, or it's me and the people that I want to include in my in-group separate from that world. As soon as we make that distinction, then we start to have trouble. And we have a lot of examples from history. We have, you know, the foundation of the Second World War. Germans are a superior race. Or we have Native Americans are savages, which led to a horrible history in North America. Or women are not capable of voting intelligently, or women are too emotional. Muslims are terrorists. You know, Mexicans are rapists. There's all of this kind of us-them duality that that has crept into our history.
And we talked so much about the mind and the ways in which the mind creates our reality. So you can see that if you sort of feed these thoughts to the general public, you know, you just say it again and again and again that, my goodness, if you are on an airplane with, you know, with a Muslim, look out. You know, you just create this fear. You put these seeds that are just untrue. They are distorted thought forms. And so, you know, you mentioned delusion was in, I believe, two of the quotes you mentioned, this delusion, this idea of an idea of a thought or a concept that is actually not aligned with reality. And so illusions, it's really can become a tool of the mind to sway people when we put these illusions out there that sort of create this belief that these other people, the them, you know, are separate than us. It can become our reality because, you know, really, Dorothy, what is a belief? It's a thought that we think again and again and again. And unless we're active and we learn to really understand our own mind, to be responsible for our own thoughts of what goes in and create our own rationalization and our own ideas about the world we live in, we can just be fed these thoughts, you know, again and again and again, and it becomes our reality. This idea that, you know, a black teen in a hoodie is up to no good. You see a black teen in a hoodie, watch out, run. You know, that's just ridiculous. You know, it's an illusion, right?
Well, and certainly in the American context, we have unfortunately many, many examples of how repetition, you know, if you think of the energy of speech, repetition feeds an illusion. And so it is said over and over and over and over and over again. And you have, you know, the illusions, the illusion of fake news. There are so many others that we have, and we have to be mindful for ourselves, and we have to take responsibility to disperse that illusion, to keep dispersing it over and over and over again.
Yes. Clarity. You talk quite a bit about clearing distortions. You know, you have said very poignantly mm-hmm. that meditation clears distortions in the mind, but it is really our job to use our mind in a way that brings clarity and that does not support distortion. But Dorothy, even it's so much about just taking responsibility for our own lives in terms of the news. What I find so fascinating these days is that even if you're watching a news program that you feel you're aligned with or that's objective, that is at least trying to find, you know, the truth, it's 24-hour cycle. They are saying the same story over and over again. There's very little, you know, there's a storyline and they don't move from it. They won't search far for different stories that will talk about sort of like the diversity of the human experience on Earth. It's whatever is the latest line, and they'll have a panel that will talk about it in 1 hour, a new panel talk about it the next hour. And it's the same line over and over and over again. So it's just interesting. We have to really watch what goes in our mind because we can really fall, you know, you can see how these illusions can be used as a tool. Right. And so we have to watch ourselves. And it's those that are a little bit scared of the truth coming out tend to talk about the media, like watch out for the media, because they realize that whoever's got control of what's going into your brain really potentially has control of the world we create. Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's interesting that you mentioned the same storylines. I find that I have like 6 or 7 different news sources that I check each day because they have, they're situated in different countries, you know, they focus on different things, and the world looks quite different if you're looking at one news source or another in terms of where the emphasis is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but, variety. Beautiful. Hey, Dorothy, listen, before we go any further, we got to go to a break.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, listeners, we'll be right back after these words.
Hi, I'm Barbara Scheidegger, clinical hypnotherapist and founder of Swiss Hypnotherapy. And this is a tip with purpose. Being wrong or making mistakes is human. What have you learned from it? Start laughing about the silly things you did. Yeah, laugh about it. Being happy is more important than being always right. Start listening to your feedback. Be willing to redefine yourself every day. Communication with yourself and others who already are successful in their lives. Stay balanced. And when you fall off the wagon, don't dwell on it. Just hop back on. Forgive yourself. Admit what you did. Move on and smile. I hope this tip helps you You can reach me at 323-999-4775 or at my website at swisshypnotherapy.com.
Please join us for a transformational conference with five, that's right, five of the leading pioneers in the fields of science and spirituality, all in one place. Join best-selling authors and teachers Greg Braden, Dr. Bruce Lipton, Lynn McTaggart, Dr. Joe Dispenza, and Lee Carroll in both individual workshops as well as a weekend of keynote presentations and panel discussions. At this extraordinary event, you'll get to experience some of the brightest leaders of our world today, empowering you with groundbreaking new information, deep wisdom, and practical tools to transform your life. Come connect with others and expand your consciousness in beautiful Nanaimo on Vancouver Island in British Columbia, June 14th through 19th. For more information or to register for what some are expecting to be one of the best conferences of 2018, visit shalohaproductions.com. That's S-H-A-L-O-H-A productions.com. Or visit the individual speakers' websites.
Conscious Confidence Radio, a timeless wisdom with Sarah Main. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio and join Sarah on an adventurous journey to the deeper level of meaning to move beyond today's world of constant change, confusion, and uncertainty beyond the shadow of fear. This hit show explores key concepts such as confidence, values, and attitude in a dynamic way. To learn more about Sarah and her work, visit sarahmain.com.
Stay juicy. Tune in to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake, co-hosting monthly with Dr. Pat, and every second Monday at 12 p.m. on Transformation Talk Radio. My show, Your Juicy Love, helps you find the dynamic, life-affirming love you've always wanted. Transform your relationships and bring peace, joy, and juicy, juicy love to planet Earth. For more information, visit unadrake.com.
Welcome back, listeners, to Spirit Fire Radio. Before we continue our conversation, I'd love to tell you a little bit about how Spirit Fire Radio came about. Actually, Dorothy, do you want to tell us a little bit about how Spirit Fire Radio came about?
Absolutely. A couple of years ago, the School for Esoteric Studies put out a talk, actually, about how spiritual groups or like-minded groups tended to compete with each other for, you know, attention, rather than collaborating with each other. And so we decided that we wanted to intentionally collaborate. Now, the School for Esoteric Studies is focused on providing training for persons with a spiritual practice that want to deepen it. And we put out this call. We have a section on our website, which is esotericstudies.net, about intergroup collaboration. And just as we were starting that process, Steve and I met at a conference. And I thought, this is a great opportunity to collaborate. And we, Steve invited me on to Spirit Fire Radio's program, which was being done only by Spirit Fire at that point. Everything went well, and we decided to join together and do it as a collaboration. And it's been wonderful. Thank you very much, Steve.
Well, thank you. That was so, you know, that was so apropos, right? Spiritual organizations in competition. Like, isn't that, it just shouldn't be. It's such a head scratcher. Yet, Dorothy, you and I can attest that that happens quite often. Mm-hmm. It is so interesting. But, you know, we teach what we have to learn the most, I find. So, yes, indeed. So cooperation versus competition. It's an interesting thing. So Dorothy, separativeness. Let's continue that. Oh wait, I didn't even tell you about Spirit Fire. Look at
well,
that.
Well, I was just going to say.
I got all excited. it's a two-way street here. I'll just go quickly. Spirit Fire is an educational nonprofit, and we focus on what do we focus on? I'm so ready to be focused on separativeness, on bringing about spirituality and cultivating consciousness and bringing about spirituality in your everyday life. We do that through study, meditation, and service. Spirit Fire has its own meditation practice called the Practice of Living Awareness. It's an online meditation practice, free for any of you. You could check it out at spiritfire.com. We also have a retreat center in Western Massachusetts. Lots of great classes and courses and retreats at spiritfire.com. There we go. No one can see, but I'm blushing.
Okay, so separativeness. I want to link this to the concept of depersonalization, Steve, because the way that we create and hold in place separativeness is that we depersonalize others. We stop seeing them as humans like ourselves. We see them as being unable to really think as clearly or as abstractly as ourselves, as not as trustworthy as ourselves, not having the kind of identity or willingness to be inclusive as we have. So basically, very different from ourselves. And that's, if anybody has ever studied some of the horrors of humanity, the concentration camps, that kind of thing, you'll see that the first step is humiliation and dehumanization of the person, and that allows then others to treat them as an object rather than as a human. But it's important to remember that we can also depersonalize ourselves, right? We can not credit our own intuition, defer to external authority, not value our own experience. So we need to start with honoring ourselves and then honoring others as being as important as ourselves. And today's great danger, which is why I'm so glad we're talking about this, Steve, is that we are in the process of normalizing separativeness. And there's that image you may be familiar with of the frog in the water, right? You put the frog in the water, you gradually increase the temperature. The frog doesn't notice, and all of a sudden it's been boiled alive. It's dead. And that, I think, is the danger that we are in right now, is that all of this repetitive, separative messages is starting to become just ho-hum. That's the way the world is.
Yeah. And well, not to backtrack, but you know, you were just talking about the ways in which we sort of allow this depersonalization of another. And I always think, you know, how could these atrocities that we saw during the Second World War, I mean, it has just become, we all know what took place and have seen images, but that has taken place, within humanity in so many different situations. The Bolshevik Revolution, we could talk about it in terms of human history, like way back to the beginning of human relations. But this idea that you could inflict that kind of pain upon another human being and the ways in which you would have to cut off your own intuition, you know, your own sense of right and wrong, you really would have to see, you know, the divide you would have to create between an us versus them. And the illusion, just back to the illusion, you know, that in America, African Americans are closer to an animal than a human being. And so you sort of would see them as an animal and then justify being able to own another human being in the way that you would own, you know, a workhorse to work on a farm. It just always baffles me, this idea that we can create an illusion such as race. You know, I mean, we've pretty much proven that race is a complete illusion, that genetically speaking, we are not different from each other, if different at all, genetically. That we can create that kind of divide. And you think within Nazi Germany that became, that separativeness just became such a way of life that this was happening right in front of people. And they just said, well, okay, you know, that's the way it is, which is what you're saying in today's great danger, that you just put it out there again and again and again, and it becomes your reality. And you start to think, well, you know, when it's tweeted, it's photographed, there's a GIF created about it, you put music behind it, and you just start to accept that your reality is this us versus them, and that you should be a part of it, right? You should engage in that, and it doesn't have to be your reality.
Yeah, and if we take, I think in this particular show, we do need to take President Trump's behavior as a shining example of how to normalize separativeness. Because we need to inoculate ourselves against it. And so he does a couple of things. One thing that he does is he asserts an outrageous extreme, so outrageous that you wouldn't, who could ever believe that? And then he walks it back, but he walks it back to a place that you would not have accepted before. It's just that because it's been walked back, it seems like it's okay, and it's not.
And because you were just so far out in the chaos, yes, that when it walked back three steps, you go, well, it's better than that was.
That's right.
But why
that's right.
That was.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then he asserts untruth so often that the truth gets erased. Like he says, I have nothing to do with Russia. I don't know anybody in Russia. Haven't done any business in Russia. But he was signing contracts for Trump Moscow during the debates of the, leading up to the election. The number of Russians that he and those around him have been in touch with is staggering. But he just keeps saying it over and over again. And then he floats ideas that you would never think a president of the United States would do, because the president is supposed to be there to work for the welfare of the people and he promises to protect the Constitution, the rights enshrined in the Constitution of free speech and so on. But then he says things like, you should jail them for that thought. And he'll say it over and over again. Lock her up with Hillary Clinton is an excellent example of that. Or one of the ones now is, I might close down the country in September. Why would a president deprive the citizens of the services that their tax dollars pay for? Or another one, I'll testify if I am treated fairly by the special prosecutor. Whoever thought he wasn't going to be? But when he says it enough, it just inserts that little grain of uncertainty. He is really a master at creating divisiveness. And that's why I think it's important to analyze his behavior.
Well, and he is also a master at keeping illusion in place, by repeating something again and again and again. And this, this idea of believing, of drinking your own Kool-Aid, of believing the thought and actually creating your reality based upon your thoughts and your words and your actions, he's in a great position of power. So to be able to use that idea of thoughts into reality is, quite literally, this is what dictators do. They will take something that wouldn't appeal to everybody, but they say it again and again and again as an absolute truth. And before you know it, it has become a reality. And it is because of the power of mind. So it can be, it is indeed something to look at. Mm-hmm. And he's also got this way of sort of using that chaos as a distraction. He's even said himself that he likes to find two people. And he says he employs this even at the White House. He finds two people with very different positions. And he puts them together in almost a fight, in like a dog fight, and watches the chaos. And that way he basically learns what's the strongest point, who's the strongest person. So he's actually he's working from this place of not at all of cooperation, but of competition, and actually, orchestrating it. And he sees gaining from it, but all we've seen is more chaos from that. Mm-hmm. Indeed. So right, Dorothy, we got to go to another break. But let's continue that conversation when we come back.
To find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class Facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Love Living Radio Ignite Your Whole Being with Emily Perkins is a show for those looking to explore the sparkling magnificence of their inner selves. Tune in every second and fourth Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific as Emily sheds a radiant light of love on the beauty and power that resides within you. Discussing love in all its forms through conversations that provoke awareness, curiosity, and expansion, Emily shares the unlimited power of love. For more information or to listen to this show, visit lovelivingholistics.com.
Practice living in wholeness with the Body Tune-Up. 6 classes for $89 designed for radical self-healing and self-regeneration. Heal the deepest root of any challenge. The mental body was programmed in negativity, not good enough. Separate from source, you're too much, you'll never make it. The emotional body holds all the pain and trauma of emotional suppression, all the pain from this life and life's past. The spiritual body is the place you connect with your higher power, your higher self, with the image and likeness of the One. The physical body houses and expresses the other three bodies every day. Go to CorneliaStephanie.com. Evolve, become a practitioner. We need to heal, integrate, and bring into wholeness and harmony the physical body, addressing all the other bodies in order to live in our true, authentic nature.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. Gosh, Dorothy, before we went to the break, we were on the hot topic of Donald Trump. He who shall not be mentioned, but it's important, right? Because he is such an actual pristine example of divisiveness and of separativeness that it is mind-boggling. You need only turn on the news and you'll see one example after another of ways in which he sees pulling us apart as being strength, make America great again. His logo, his mascot was the wall. Dorothy, it makes me think of that, when the way in which he manipulates that, when he basically said that there was a conflict of the judge that was presiding over that Trump University litigation. And he said, basically, there was a conflict because he was of Mexican heritage and he was a member of this Latinos Law Association. He basically said that he could not preside over this court. And he was asked by so many different news organizations, he was on CBS Face the Nation and basically saying this idea of I'm not being treated fairly. And they kept trying to make sense of this idea that this this judge, this U.S. judge who, you know, whose parents were naturalized U.S. citizens from Mexico, could somehow not be fair to him because he was of Mexican descent. And it created such a kerfuffle. And everybody was just saying, oh, he's a racist. And, you know, how could you say that? They spent an hour on basically the entire interview on Face the Nation talking about how does this make sense? Why doesn't this make sense? And Trump would constantly come back and say, you know, listen, it's not complicated. This isn't so complicated. It's quite simple to me. I'm building a wall and he isn't going to be fair. I'm not going to be treated fairly. It's not confusing. He uses very sort of demeaning language. But what people miss is the whole point that he was being sued for basically a fake university and misleading people. And in the end, he settled that case. $25 million paved the way for thousands of more students to ask for their money back. And you know what? You know, at the end, the judge basically said that it featured false advertisements and empty promises. Like that was the argument against this real estate school. False advertisements and empty promises. So right there you have this idea of falsity, of misleading people, of creating separation. And he uses this chaos as a way to not really see his truth, which is, it's all about me. It's that, you know, in that quote you talked about, like self-absorption, right? This idea of being so self-absorbed that you manipulate, you have the power to manipulate, and you think you're right, you're not being treated fairly, but yet you've treated all of these other people unfairly by misleading them about your university, and you then pay it off because you know you're wrong. And you know what's hysterical about that, and then I'll let this go, is that in the end, where I have a quote, like in the end, he basically switched on the judge who he really said was incompetent or wouldn't judge him fairly and said that it was a textbook example of a district court acting properly in administering a settlement. I mean, that's just bizarre. He went from basically saying he couldn't judge it fairly to saying it was a textbook example of proper administration. Yeah. So it's all so confusing. And what he's doing then is just, you know.
Well, I think the problem is that his statements are being evaluated through an incorrect filter. People think that he is voicing a strongly held belief when what he is doing is voicing whatever will get him the end that he wants.
Right. This idea of empathy following thought.
If the opposite will serve him better, then he states the opposite. This is why there are so many lies, because it's not the actual reality that he is voicing. What he is doing is manipulating thought forms in order to get a particular end for himself. And right. That's a dynamic that people are not that familiar with. The last person who did this really, really effectively was Hitler. Yep. And we don't like to think of ourselves as having anything to do with Nazism or being in a Nazi regime, but there are some very unfortunate and clear parallels. I'd like to just take this from a slightly different angle, Steve, because I think what's important, I think, in terms of our show is for people to understand this is not about bashing on a particular person. It is trying to help people understand dynamics and their consequences. And Trump is just an excellent example of the consequence. Trump's behavior is an excellent example of the consequences of divisiveness that derive from that behavior. So I'd just like to give a couple of examples. So since 2016, since Trump rose on the political stage, so to speak, the FBI reports that hate crimes in the U.S. have increased to a point not seen in recent history, that hate crimes had been decreasing steadily since 1992 until the 2015-2016 period. Now, the Southern Poverty Law Center reports that there are 954 hate groups. These are not individuals. These are identifiable groups who publish their philosophy, and their philosophy is, you know, Islamist or anti-Muslim or anti-immigrant or whatever. Hate crimes are also spreading to other countries. In Canada, hate crimes are up 3%. Now, that may not seem like a lot to people, but it feels like a lot in Canada. There are specific types of groups that are coming to the fore that we haven't really seen publicly before. And one of these is the group called INCEL, which stands for Involuntary Celibate. These are men who believe that women have deprived them from sex. In other words, they put the blame on women. Their philosophy is very misogynistic. And the driver of the van that drove down the Toronto sidewalks and killed people, killed mainly women because he was aiming for women, and he announced himself as part of an incel group.
Wow.
And then finally, so the Southern Poverty Law Center put out this quote: President Trump has opened the White House doors to extremism, not only consulting with hate groups on policies that erode civil rights protections, but enabling the infiltration of extremist ideas into the administration's rhetoric and agenda. And that includes anti-Black and continuing birther mythology, saying that President Obama was not actually a U.S. citizen. Anti-immigrant, including ending the temporary protected status for over 10 citizens from over 10 countries. Referring to sanctuary cities as crime-infested breeding grounds. Anti-Muslim, and then, of course, white nationalists. So this is the consequence of the type of rhetoric that Trump has adopted in order to advance a particular agenda of his own, in order to get attention and to get adulation. So this is not trivial. This is something we need to take very, very seriously.
When it shows that we just can't be passive, and where you have to tip your hat to, you know, the Southern Poverty Law Center, right? Because, you know, this is how it happens, very, very slowly. And before you know it, because you've been watching the chaos over here and not been aware, you know, you haven't zoomed out, as we were talking about the body, the mind, consciousness, mm-hmm. how it is the next highest level that has to observe and see what's going on below it. You know, we've got to take a stance that's up a little bit higher so we can get the whole picture, see the whole picture, and make decisions, you know, that and say, this is not who I am, this is not who we are as a country, as a people, as a humanity, and I basically won't stand for this. You know, sometimes we just, it's along the lines of that materialistic thinking, oh, you know, I'm just going to focus on my life. You know, it doesn't really involve me, but mm-hmm. it does involve you. Everything in the entire cosmos is interconnected. You are interconnected whether you like it or not. And these actions do and will affect your life. You know, this zoom out, zoom in. But we can't be passive. You know, we've got to know what's going on. And
I would link that back to what we talked about last week in terms of the myth of local realism, you know, that it's just, you know, that my experience, me, is separate from everything else, but it's not. And part of the problem, part of why, you know, we've used the terminology of normalizing separativeness, is that it's exhausting, right?
Yeah.
It's like this continuous reality show with all of this very emotion-laden rhetoric. And
yes.
So you do want to just say, whew, I'm just going to take a vacation. You know, I don't, this doesn't affect me. I'm just going to be myself. But that's how the Nazis got the power that they did.
Well, and it, you know, that kind of stress level that is involved in participating in this also, you know, stress in our lives creates contraction. You know, if eventually it eats you away, it actually will render you powerless. So we have to watch, you know, and that's why our inner being says, oh, too stressful, I can't. So, you know, you've got to find a way. You've got to find a way to stay aligned and yet, you know, expose the truth and be a proponent of that for sure. Mm-hmm. We're going to go to another break. I think it's interesting that Dorothy, when we get back, I just want to talk about that. You know, this new lynching memorial, you know, this memorial just opened in Montgomery, Alabama, and so much interesting stuff has come out of that. So I want to mention that a bit before we move on.
Great.
But in the next segment, listeners, we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Barbara Scheidegger, clinical hypnotherapist and founder of Swiss Hypnotherapy. My goal is to help you to reach your goal. And this is a tip with purpose. Everybody wants it and nobody has enough of it. But it comes to a point that you have to tell yourself, I can get more. I want more. I deserve more. I'm talking about money. More money, more money, more money. That's what people want. But what has to be done? Your thoughts have to change, that you can allow yourself to tell yourself, I have money and I want more money. How much money? What is it? Put it out there. Write it down. What would you do with more money? How would you feel to have more money? I hope this tip helps you going through the day today. You can reach me at 323-999-4775 or at my website at swisshypnotherapy.com.
Are you your story? Or can you change your story? Can you change what you believe to be true about yourself and your circumstances as part of your healing journey? What if you were to change your expectations? What if you were to invite ease and cooperation into every day and then step back and see what happens? It might just be easier. I'm Megan Edge, and I hope that you'll join me on my new radio show, Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host Dr. Pat on Transformation Talk Radio. I look forward to seeing you there.
Want to find out more about Megan Edge? Visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Hi, I'm Steve Kramer of Spirit Fire Radio, and I believe that meditation changes everything. It leads us in the direction of greater well-being, and that's a fact. I struggled with meditation for years. I understood the principles, but I found it hard to incorporate them into my everyday life. Spirit Fire's meditation practice changed that. It's called the Practice of Living Awareness, and it's taught in 14 steps. These are 14 tools that I can use in any moment, on and off the cushion. Steps like smile, flow, and ground of being support my clarity of mind while I'm navigating the ups and downs of modern life. That's why it's called the Practice of Living Awareness. If you'd like to add meditation to your daily experience, the Practice of Living Awareness is free, online, and it's suited for any level of practitioner. Visit spiritfire.com for more information. And be sure to check out Spirit Fire's meditation retreats in Western Massachusetts. It's all there at spiritfire.com. Hello, welcome back. Before the break, I mentioned this new memorial that just opened up in Montgomery, Alabama, and it is really quite a beautiful memorial that is taking a look at lynchings in America. And just as we were talking about, you know, we keep talking about World War II and sort of some similarities of what we're seeing in the way of eroding civil rights and separatism. And I find it interesting that in America, we sort of turned a blind eye to lynchings. That they happened in America, you know, on a regular basis to a just shocking and frightening, frequency. And it took the atrocities of World War I and World War II and actually the Holocaust and Hitler using photos of U.S. lynchings and making an example of U.S. segregation laws and interracial marriage laws to further his own assertions about race. You know, it sort of took these, you know, overseas somebody saying, well, look at America, look how America's doing this, for Americans to say, wow, we're being made an example of and this is not us. You know, I find that fascinating, like the ways in which we just, we don't see what's happening right in front of us. So wanted to bring that up. Really, really interesting. I'm looking for the website. I have it down. I will say it. I'll get it to you before the end of the show. I wrote it down. Anyway, the Equal Justice Initiative. Listeners, really fascinating. There's a whole section on lynching in America. It's called EJI.org. It's the Equal Justice Initiative. And I just find it interesting that these lynchings, most of these lynchings were the result of accusing a black man of sexual assault against a woman, like saying it was in the name of protecting women. And I just find it so interesting that basically our president is like a self-proclaimed perpetrator, but yet somehow we just ignore that. Anyway, enough about...
And unfortunately, it's not really funny. And
yeah.
It's interesting because we have this whole issue now of how many women did his lawyer pay off? And people, at the one hand, hear that, and the other hand, when the Access Hollywood tape came out, there was all that pushback that, oh, no, this couldn't possibly be true. And yet we have evidence that it was true. It's like many, many things in terms of interactions with Russians, in terms of treatment of women, that President Trump will simply say, no, it's not. And he'll say it enough and loudly enough that people believe him.
Yeah, and that would basically be the life of somebody else. And in his case, completely ignored. I wanted to mention before the end of the show, because such an interesting experiment, the Robbers Cave experiment, and it's sort of this experiment in conflict resolution. Listeners, if you don't know about this experiment, it was a psychological study. They took a group of 22 12-year-old boys, and they put them in separate buses and basically sent them to summer camp and gave them different identities. There was one called the Rattlers, and the other group was called the Eagles, and they gave them separate living quarters, and they put them together in these like highly competitive games, basically what our president does with two people he's trying to have a meeting with, and have them just compete. And they got, you know, all the counselors in the camp were psychologists in disguise studying these students. And basically everything went crazy. People started stealing each other's prize money. They were ripping down each other's flags. They were raiding cabins. It just turned into complete havoc. And it turned into, you know, us versus them at its worst, and led to these really divisive actions, and basically, you know, just started to destroy the camp, which just feels like what we're watching in our country right now. But then the counselors created a series of crises that in which like these boys had to work together. You know, there was a truck stuck in the mud, and they had to work together to get this truck out, or the water all of a sudden became tainted and they had to find a way to get a new water supply. And these were things that affected the whole camp, and they had to work together. So they realized that as these kids worked together, they started sitting together, they started talking, they started eating together. Basically, as they started to work on a common goal, by the end of the camp, the kids unanimously voted that they would ride home together and not on separate buses. So it just proves that if we can look at something as, you know, if we can look at a greater project that we're all involved in, like this thing called humanity, life on planet Earth, and realize that if we cooperate, we can actually create something worthwhile. And if we are just always at each other all the time and engaged in competitive games, which it seems like is happening quite a bit, you know, we actually create, you know, we create chaos and we watch the breakdown of the system. So, you know, it's a wonderful example of how to get beyond yourself. You know, ask yourself, you know, am I critical? It's criticism, you know, that blocks energy flow and creates this separateness. You know, when we criticize another, we're really creating this separation. We're creating a void in that field between us, which is what we were talking about in the last show. It's that relationship, that field between us that's so important, you know, just by watching yourself. How often do I criticize? You know, is what I'm saying or thinking an observation or is it a criticism? Do I stereotype other people? You know, a stereotype is a belief about an individual based on imagined or these realistic characteristics of a group that they belong to. You know, do I stereotype or do I see somebody as an individual? And you know, these stereotypes then can lead to prejudice if we use that against them. So just watching yourself and seeing ways in which you see, or I'm an eagle and you're a rattler. And it seeps in. So we have to become aware and really watch our thoughts, watch our mind, what is generated and what am I exposing myself to that could affect those thoughts and my speech and then my actions and create my reality. Yep.
Absolutely, Steve. And underline all of that, which we'll be coming back to in the next show, is we are basically cooperative beings. Studies, psychological studies of young children or young chimpanzees or whatever show that they will cooperate with each other. They will try to help each other out. And it's just socialization that takes us in the direction of destruction and competition. It's yes. Not our internal nature. But I'd like to, before we end the show, I'd like to talk about this idea of stopping the energetic flow, because we've talked about, you know, that we're all part of an energetic field, and then we create separativeness. We forget that we are all interconnected. But what we're also doing is we are stopping the flow of energy, because what we need for health in our body, what we need in terms of the way that society functions, is a give and take, right? And if we only take, if we don't give, then there are problems. And we've seen this, for example, in the environment where people who take the position that economic benefits are much more important than appropriate stewardship of the environment. We see the consequences of that. And I think one of the things that we forget, Steve, is that when we talk about interconnection and that we're all part of a field, part of the of that field is what some people have called Gaia or Mother Earth. And scientists have recognized for the last 16 years publicly that that Mother Earth is a sentient being. You only have to think of the ways in which the Earth acts to maintain a balance, even when we as humans try to destroy that. But there's a point after which, you know, Mother Earth isn't going to just sit still. We have, for example, in the oceans, we have the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, if people haven't read about that. This is floating plastic and other debris that humans have created, and it is now, that patch is now three times the size of France and more than twice the size of Texas. It's huge. In fact, some people have talked about it as its own separate country, but it's not only in the Pacific where that is forming, and that has consequences for all marine life. We see examples of Mother Earth fighting back. We have the volcanic eruption right in Hawaii and the destruction of homes. And if you've seen any of those pictures of the lava flows and the pavement just crumbling in the face of the lava flows, we have to recognize that the Earth is actually very powerful. It can be an ally, but it's only going to tolerate a certain amount. And if we just keep taking from it and taking from it, thinking of it as a separate thing, not an energetic field that we're part of, the consequences can only be negative.
And that the Mother Earth will create balance, right? In the end, mm-hmm. Mother Earth will create balance. Dorothy, we are at the end of the show.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yes. Listeners, thank you so much. And we're going to continue this conversation for the rest of the month. We have 5 weeks on interconnectivity because of May. We've got 5 weeks this year. So, listeners, we'll be back next week to continue this conversation on separativeness, on interconnectivity. How do we create that connection and maintain the balance like Mother Earth is reminding us, right? Keep the balance or else, right, Dorothy? Mm-hmm. It's been a pleasure. And we will be with you again next week. Thanks so much, listeners, and thanks, Dorothy.
Thanks to all of you as well.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern, for your weekly guide to purposeful living and practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit spiritfireradio.com.